Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. My next guest found comfort in her 10-year-old son's Asperger's diagnosis last year and then had the rug pulled out from under her when a few months later, Asperger's was officially removed from the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, or the DSM, as it's commonly called in the healthcare industry. Here to talk about her family's experience and why it was a good thing they eventually came around to the non-label, in her opinion, is Hannah Rosen, who writes for Slate and is a national correspondent at The Atlantic. Her article in this month's issue of The Atlantic is called Letting Go of Asperger's. Hi, Hannah. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
And listeners, maybe some of you are going through something similar since Asperger's was removed from the DSM. Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC. So you wrote that you and your husband pretty much knew that your son had Asperger's, which is considered sort of a milder condition along the autism spectrum, I guess, or something had something like it when he was a young child, but you didn't have him evaluated until he was 10. Why not?
Yeah, I couldn't say he absolutely had Asperger's. I used to say things like spectrum-y, you know, he seems spectrum-y, and, you know, he certainly saw a therapist who helped him with social skills and all the range of things that people with Asperger's deal with. But because you don't have an official diagnosis, you can never say for sure. So I kind of lived happily in the gray zone for many years.
And when he was 10, you got him diagnosed because?
It started to become complicated. Like, as they get older, the gap between them and their peers gets bigger, and you're trying to explain to the teacher in this complicated novelistic language what your son is like. And, you know, at some point you just realize maybe it's just easier to have a word here that people will recognize and can identify with and just say, oh, rather than this long, complicated explanation.
And did it help him in some way or help the family that he got diagnosed with Asperger's?
Yeah, surprisingly it did. I didn't expect it because I thought, oh, it's much better to think of your child as a unique flower, as we all like to do, and maybe giving him a label will, you know, make him more generic to me. That's one thing that one worries about when you label your son like that. But in fact, what it did was clarify things, allow us to enter a world which includes lots of help. He now goes to a school which has Asperger's in its name, and it's just been a wonderful difference. It's like you look something in the eye, and then, you know, he's around people who are like him, he's getting the help he needs, and it turned out to be very helpful.
But now there's no such thing as Asperger's.
Exactly. It was literally a few months after we got the diagnosis, the DSM removed Asperger's as a category. Now you're just somewhere along the spectrum, and Asperger's doesn't exist as a separate class of autism.
Is this a problem for you or your son?
It's funny because he still goes to an Asperger's school, and I think Asperger's is going to become one of those words like neurotic or depressed that has a clinical definition or used to have a clinical definition, but which we use casually in the culture. So it's hard for me to imagine a world in which there kind of is a typical Asperger's kids, even if the diagnoses don't exactly match from state to state. That's why they removed it, because they were getting uneven diagnoses across the country, and yet you kind of see it, you know it when you see it. And so I think it will just be used casually instead of specifically diagnostically.
But a lot of parents are upset because they fear that children previously diagnosed with having Asperger's syndrome might not now be diagnosed as on the autism spectrum and might lose access to helpful and sometimes expensive state services.
Exactly, and it's even deeper than that. I think Asperger's gelled in the last, say, 30, 40 years as a really distinct identity. There's been memoirs written by people with Asperger's, even if they discovered it when they were older. It's a really tight community that likes to see themselves as very different from the rest of people on the autism spectrum, and is almost special. You know, they came through in their memoirs as people with special minds that we could almost envy.
And so have the authors of the DSM done a disservice because they've kind of, you know, taken the label away from a whole population that considers itself a very real group?
Well, I ultimately concluded that they were not doing a disservice, because I feel like there was an era when Asperger's really needed to define themselves almost as like, we're Irish, we're going to speak Gaelic, you know, is really kind of distinct. But I felt like the next generation was entering a world in which we think differently about disabilities, in which disabilities and sort of neurotypical and not neurotypical exist for us along a sliding scale, and they don't necessarily want to be cordoned off into their own box. That's what I felt about the second generation of people with Asperger's, the younger kids, that it's nicer for them to be able to kind of slide along the scale and maybe slide into neurotypical or normal.
But what box are they in? I mean, maybe they're put into the autism box, which tends to have other more severe implications, at least to people from outside that box, or they're just put into no syndrome box, but really they're having these different struggles.
Yeah, I think it's going to be they're going to be in a mild autism box. I mean, we have to see how this actually unfolds. It's hard for me to believe that a kid with Asperger's wouldn't be labeled something. You know, they would be something mild along the autism spectrum. But I see what you mean. Maybe if people use the word mild, they'll think the symptoms are mild, which isn't actually true. Asperger's is just a different set of challenges than other autistics. I wouldn't say it was worse or better. In some ways, it's a more difficult thing to deal with just because it's in a gray zone. In some ways, it's an easier thing to deal with because the children can kind of get along in the world. And so you're right. I mean, the bad outcome here would be is if people who needed services couldn't get them because they had the word mild attached to their symptoms.
So listeners, do you or does your child wind up kind of spectrum-y, as Hannah Rosen put it, and now you don't know where they fall? Or are you having any struggles with accessing services or funded services since the definition, or I should say the diagnosis of Asperger's was eliminated from the DSM? 212-433-WNYC or anyone else with a question or a comment for Hannah Rosen, who writes for Slate and The Atlantic, and her article in The Atlantic is called Letting Go of Asperger's. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And let's take a call. Louise in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. My question is this. I teach adults that are trying to achieve a high school equivalency diploma. And one of my students is diagnosed as Asperger's, and he's very open about it. He announces it at the beginning of class so that students know that he's different. But he's an adult. He's 29. And I feel like I'm at a loss for how to best serve him, because I'm not skilled as a special needs teacher. Are there programs that I could direct him to or help him with, in addition to him being in my class? Because I don't think that those services are out there. He doesn't seem to be aware of them.
Hannah,
would you guess no?
Do you know?
Oh, there's lots of services out there. That's it's a great time to have Asperger's if you're going to have it, because I think 30 years ago it wouldn't have been recognized. You just would have been called weird or eccentric, and now you can really access a lot of services. It's surprising to me that someone who knows the word Asperger's and calls himself Asperger's wouldn't have access to, you know, sort of a therapist that helps with social skills, or there's lots of groups. Like one great one is called Unstuck and On Target. It's a book that's commonly used in the Asperger's community, but it shouldn't be that hard to find, you know, even to just Google your wherever you live and Asperger's and come up with something, especially if you live in a big city.
And listeners, maybe some of you can help out Louise, who teaches adult students, she says, in Brooklyn, and has one with Asperger's, and she would like to find some resources to help him with. So anybody wants to post to our website, Louise, go to our website later, and maybe you'll get some advice from folks at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer's show, Community Rally Around, this student of hers. And let's go to another caller, Ben in Clifton, a child psychologist. Is that right, Ben?
Yes. I had a question for you. I do evaluations, and I've been facing the problem where children that I might have normally diagnosed or previously diagnosed as Asperger's, I've been reluctant to give a diagnosis of autism spectrum, even though I know that might be, you know, technically appropriate, because I'm not sure how a parent might feel hearing the autism label. You know, someone who might have been ready to hear Asperger's, that now autism kind of has a much heavier thud when you drop it in front of a parent.
Hannah, what do you think?
That's an interesting dilemma. I think that for the meantime, one could say that this would be called Asperger's. You know, just give them the whole explanation. I think your son has Asperger's now. Technically, that diagnosis doesn't exist, but that's what your son looks like to me. Now they call it mild autism, you know, or some way to kind of ease people along the transition until they get used to the word. And honestly, if in the next DSM everyone is still using Asperger's, they might consider putting it back in again.
Ben, okay. Do you think that helps you?
It definitely does. You know, any hearing a parent's experience is helpful. So I appreciate your answer.
Thank you very much. Sounds like you could even sniff at the DSM, you know, say, well, I would diagnose your child with Asperger's. Of course, they don't want me to call it that anymore, but I think that's what it is. And
yeah.
If you think that softens the blow.
Yeah, something like that would be fine.
Dr. Goldman in Purchase. You're on WNYC.
Oh, my
Hello.
Goodness, I'm on. Okay. As I'm driving onto campus. I'm actually a professor at LIU, and we are on the SUNY Purchase campus. And it just so happens that yesterday I was invited to meet with a group of students with Asperger's at the SUNY Purchase campus, and we had a really spectacular conversation. They were just amazing and talked about kind of the variation in their experience about the label. Some felt that it was stigmatizing, and others said, gee, you know, when I got this, I really kind of finally understood all of these social issues that I was struggling with all along. I also just want to say very quickly, and also for other psychologists and psychiatrists out there, you guys probably know this, that many insurance companies are no longer using DSM-5. They have switched over to the ICD-10, 9 and 10, which still does maintain the Asperger's diagnosis and coding. So it does get quite complex. I've always found, in terms of working with students on the spectrum, that's what's most important, rather the label, or do we go with the conflation theory that says, you know, Asperger's is part of autism. That's what most is important, is to really understand what are the particular issues that are making it difficult for them to feel that they can relate to a more inclusive community. So that's always where I think the focus needs to be.
Thank you very much. And getting right down into that individual experiential level. So, Dr. Goldman, in your experience, before you get out of your car and go on to campus, do you think...
If I can find space.
And by the way, generally, we ask people not to talk on the air while they're driving, to pull over if you're going to make a call, because we think maybe you can take a hands-free call
if your husband is calling to ask you
to pick up some milk. But generally, we don't think the kind of concentration that's needed to talk on the radio from your car is compatible with driving. So just I'm telling everybody that.
Okay.
But
sounds like good advice.
Does the diagnosis matter in your practice?
To some, yes, and to others, no. And I think if you look at some of the current writing about the elimination from the DSM-5, it really speaks to a number of different theories. This conflation theory, which is that it really is all subsumed under, you know, a spectrum diagnosis. Some are mild, some are not mild. It's all under the ASD diagnosis. There is, you know, all of the interesting writing about neurodiversity and that labels really don't matter and that we just need to embrace that we're all somewhere on the continuum. So I think it's a very individual thing. But for people who really pride themselves on the identity of the label, such as John Elder Robison, you know, who's written a huge amount of writing. His memoirs, by the way, are spectacular about, you know, being Asperger. I see no reason why we should feel the need to strip that away. I think that, you know, as things evolve, I hope that we can embrace everybody's need to either be labeled or not.
Thank you very much for your call. I appreciate it. And Hannah Rosen, you cited a new book in your article by a writer named Daniel Tammet, who had an awakening when he realized that people didn't always behave in the exact way that he had mapped out that they would in his mind. And you eventually figured out that, in a way, you were doing that to your son, too, with his Asperger's. What
right,
did you mean?
Yeah, so an Asperger's mind likes to code and have people fit into fixed models and doesn't like unexpected things to happen. And so what Daniel Tammet realized is that he had created a model for his mother, and he expected her to behave in certain ways in certain situations, but she would keep eluding him, you know, as people who are intimate and close to you will. They will never behave exactly as you expect them to. And this was a revelation for him to show that, you know, you can't really live like that. You can't really create fixed models for people. You have to be open, as the doctor just said, as she just said, you have to be open for people to, you know, desire and want different things at different times. So you can imagine the Asperger label would be very helpful to someone maybe at certain points in their life and not helpful at other points. I mean, I could say that my son couldn't care less. I've tried many times to, you know, tell him this is what Asperger's is. And, you know, he loves being in that community, but he doesn't necessarily, you know, walk around wearing an Asperger's T-shirt or care very much. So.
Sure.
Though he might when he's 35, I don't know.
George in South Amboy, you're on WNYC. Hi, George.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Okay.
Interesting discussion and something that I've been involved with for quite a while. I have an adopted grandson who was diagnosed with Asperger's. I'm also a certified GT teacher, gifted and talented education.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that there's been a problem over the years, because as soon as we put Asperger's in the realm of autism, you know, in that parameter, the giftedness isn't recognized. So you've got a child who is, in his case, very gifted, who is all of a sudden taken out of those opportunities to learn. And that's just because of the way the system works. So they want to say it's autism, and they say, well, no, now he's learning disabled, rather than saying where the giftedness is. There's a whole other piece of this that you go into Gardner's intelligences and Pfeiffer's tests that they tried in New York
right.
a few years ago.
And you can be labeled and officially diagnosed, if that's the right word, as both with Asperger's and gifted and talented, right? You can be ADHD and gifted and talented.
Of course. The problem is that systems in general tend to look at the autism spectrum or the ADHD and say, we have more of a learning disability here than we do gifted and talented. And my sense is that we are losing a lot of really bright kids who are tremendously gifted in a variety of ways because we label them.
Which is a problem already. And you think that eliminating the label of Asperger's and putting those kids into a mild autism box makes that problem worse?
Oh, yes, it does. Because there is the assumption already within the system that autism is a learning disability.
Thank you.
Asperger's may not be. In fact, and autism shouldn't be, but our testing doesn't seem to recognize that a lot of these kids are incredibly bright.
George, thank you. Hannah Rosen, have you thought about this one?
Yes, of course. Asperger's became a shorthand in our culture for a certain kind of genius. You know, all these Silicon Valley geniuses
yeah.
who founded companies, you
right.
think, oh, maybe they have a touch of Asperger's, you know? But there's another side to that debate. Which
I've,
is
heard
that
I've heard parents joke, oh, my son is a little Asperger's-y. Ha, ha, ha. Maybe he'll grow up to be a Google genius.
Exactly. And I would be one of those people, like, you can never tell. They seem that way. They're really into programming and codes, as I said, and math. You know, they have all of those qualities that people in Silicon Valley have that make them successful. So you never know. On the other hand, I think that genius label that got attached to Asperger's kid downplayed a lot of their symptoms. It made them seem like, again, like, well, why do they need anything? You know, we don't need to help them because they're going to grow up to be, you know, a founder of the next big Google, whatever Google is. So I think it really cuts both ways. There is a kind of Asperger's pride, as you've heard from many of the callers, a sense that we are not like the rest of them, like we are special. And, you know, that's both good and bad. It's gone now, but it's both good and bad.
We're just about out of time, and you didn't write about this, but I'm just curious if you've paid any attention to the depictions of people with Asperger's on TV. We talked in this time slot yesterday with people about depictions of disability generally on TV and in the movies. And on TV these days, we have Max on Parenthood, Sheldon on Big Bang Theory, maybe Abed on Community, just to name a few. Is it helpful to have cultural references for people unfamiliar with Asperger's, or there are too many unrealistic or even unfair portrayals?
No, it's great, actually. It lends an air of glamour, as I said, to Asperger's, which cuts both ways and makes it seem less serious than it is, but it also maintains this idea of Asperger's specialness, differentness. You know, Sherlock Holmes, people watch that show and think, oh, that's kind of what an Asperger mind is like, how it digests information, you know? So I think those kinds of things actually really do help people understand what it's like to live inside that syndrome.
So we will leave it there for today. My guest has been Slate and Atlantic writer Hanna Rosin. Her article in this month's issue of The Atlantic is called Letting Go of Asperger's. Hanna, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, we will have that SAT conversation with the revisions that they announced yesterday.